The Retro Lounge is a look back into the archives of the Recruiters Lounge podcast with Jim Stroud and Karen Matinen. The Recruiters Lounge podcast posted weekly between the years of 2005 and 2010. With energy, wit, and opposite points of view, Jim Stroud and Karen Matinen discussed, debated, and squabbled like children over HR issues that affected the workplace and society overall for the benefit of all who would listen. This episode of the Recruiters Lounge originally aired on, March 28th, 2009. The title was, How Reliable Are Unemployment Statistics? Did I say that right? Yeah, How Reliable Are Unemployment Statistics? How Reliable Are Unemployment Statistics? Was the original title. I don't have the original description, unfortunately. Can't find it. I was looking everywhere for it. But could not find it. But you can hear what was said for yourself right after this important message. Critical race theory supports the logic that all whites are born racist and oppressors by nature. They are to be viewed as a collective threat to non-white people and beyond redemption. This sentiment is already infecting the American workplace via racial sensitivity and diversity trainings. Despite the obvious controversy, such trainings are being accepted as just and fair and at an alarming pace across corporate America. Racism Reimagined: How Critical Race Theory Imperils the American Workplace is an ebook that I wrote. In it, I do three things. One, I explain the basics of critical race theory. Two, I demonstrate how critical race theory is negatively affecting the American workplace. And three, I inspire a resistance to critical race theory being taught in the workplace. In light of the increased sensitivity to recent events like the George Floyd protests, the emergence of cancel culture, and the pressures on corporations to adhere to political correctness, the information in my ebook, Racism Reimagined, How Critical Race Theory Imperils the American Workplace, is a counterbalance that should be carefully considered prior to new investments in diversity training. Racism Reimagined, How Critical Race Theory Imperils the American Workplace is a free resource that can be downloaded and, by all means, shared with those in your network. A download link is available in the podcast description.
Hi, I'm Jim Stroud. Welcome to the Recruiters Lounge. The Recruiters Lounge is a podcast of news, interviews, and commentary on the recruiting industry, and it was designed with you in mind. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your time in the Recruiters Lounge.
Hello, I'm Jim Stroud.
And I'm Karen Matinen.
And this is the Recruiters Lounge. A new kind of opening from the everyday opening that we usually have at the lounge, because we're trying to do something different here in the lounge. It's a brand new year. You know, actually, this is our first podcast of 2008.
That is. Happy New Year, everybody.
New Year. Woo!
Well, oh, my gosh. Anyways, he's giving me kudos now back, okay? He's giving me the kudos I think he thinks I deserve.
What?
You're giving me the kudos I deserve.
I am?
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are.
Such a wonderful co-host.
Yeah, you're so wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
My nose is brown enough, okay?
Insert sappy music here. What did you get for Christmas? I forgot to ask you that. What'd you get? Anything good?
A lot of people loving me.
Woohoo!
I'm serious. You won't believe how many...
Is that on video or just...
Oh, it was like, no, I mean, people from the industry and stuff. I had so many emails from so many people. And you know what's so bad is that this year I did not send out any Christmas cards to anyone.
You know what? I didn't either. You know what I did do? I'm sending emails to people. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of text messages back and forth over the holidays, which I think that might be like the new Christmas card thing. It just sent a text message.
Or SMS message, too, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
I've seen that a lot, too. Yeah, my husband had a couple of those, too, by the way. He showed me them. He thought that was kind of weird because he doesn't do messaging. He's one of those weird guys that doesn't get into the Internet. You know?
But he uses the phone just for calling people?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so nice.
And he doesn't use the Internet either. He always has me look up stuff for him. He knows how to do it, but he said, well, can you go search something for me? I'm serious. I mean, you know when people keep saying you can find everybody on the Internet? I'm like, yeah, right. You don't know my husband.
All right, well,
My sons are like that, too. Even though you can, you know, MySpace, the whole thing, they're not into it anymore. They're kind of burnt out.
Mm.
It's kind of weird.
Mm.
I know people who actually don't like using the Internet.
Well, you know, I was asking about the video because I was thinking about maybe we should put a video up of ourselves up on the next episode of Curtis Lounge so people can see what we look like.
Ew.
I know you're photo adverse.
No,
was
that
video adverse?
I have a phobia.
You should get over it.
No,
people want to see what you look like. When you start ranting, they can have more of a mental picture of how you're looking when you're ranting.
Well, you know, my in-laws actually think that I might be one of them, the FBI or something.
Mm.
I just don't like having pictures done. There's only about three pictures in our house.
My wife's the same way. She doesn't like taking pictures.
Your wife, too?
She hates taking pictures.
I swear.
You had to catch her in just the right mood and when she's not looking.
Exactly. I am so not photogenic. I swear. I do not know why.
Okay. We're rambling. Let's get back to what we're here for.
This is rambling?
Well, maybe not, but, you know.
It's a new year.
All right, let me just wrap it up. Happy New Year, everyone.
Hey, by the way, were telling me about something that's really, really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's start with that one. Because, okay. You know, I was in India last year, and I wish I had known about this when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in Hyderabad. I went to Hyderabad. People who don't know, I was in Hyderabad, India. I don't get tired of saying that because I had such a good time there. And did some training and trained some recruiters on how to use the Internet to find people and other stuff like that.
And he was good, too, by the way.
And I read this article recently. It was in the Wall Street Journal, and it was in Hyderabad. And I wish I had known this when I was there. But let me just tell you what it was about. This article in the Wall Street Journal was talking about Lord Balaji, which is a worship incarnation. He's a Hindu god. One of the incarnations of the Hindu Lord Vishnu. And he's getting a lot of hype and a lot of attention in Hyderabad lately because this Hindu god, Lord Balaji, he is now nicknamed the Visa God. And it's a certain temple in Hyderabad called Shankar Balaji where people go. Actually, it draws about 100,000 visitors a week. And many of them go to pray to Lord Balaji for visas to travel or to move to the United States and other Western countries. So if you were a Hindu or if you were a worshiper of this particular god, you would come to this particular temple or maybe other temples too, the temple Shankar Balaji, and you would go there and you would pray that this Hindu god would bless you so that you can get a visa and come to America and work, which I thought was so interesting. And I was like, man, I wish I had known when I was there. I took pictures and asked people. And it was just, let me quote this section from the Wall Street Journal here. And it's this guy named Mahanti Dolagobinda. I'm probably massacring this poor guy's name here, but let's just go by Mahanti. He's one of the Visa God believers that the Wall Street Journal had interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 years ago, a U.S. consulting company applied for a visa on his behalf, and it was rejected. And the company tried again the following year. Well, Mahanti's friends told him, hey, dude, go down to the Shankar Balaji Temple ahead of your next interview with the U.S. consulate. Go down there first and pray to the visa god, and he'll take care of you. And sure enough, weeks later, he sailed through the interview. And when Wall Street Journal interviewed him, he said, I've never heard of anyone who's gone to the temple whose visas got rejected.
Wow.
I thought that was just amazing.
Now, for many Catholics, I think that would be the consideration, which I'm Catholic, by the way. I think we would call him St. Francis of Assisi.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, you know how we have these sayings for everything, too, so they kind of like, you know, go to the saint and you say, pray for us so that we could get whatever we want. I think we'd have like that. I think our virgin would be like the Saint Francis with Assisi. He's a work of miracles, you know?
Wow. That is fascinating to me. Because
I think that's extremely fascinating. I mean, it's like, what's also fascinating to me in this regard, okay?
Hmm.
When we were thinking, when you told me about this, the first thing that can pop up in my mind was, you know, how badly I wanted to move to America. When I was younger, I mean, I had these dreams of the streets being lined with gold and paved with gold, you know, and I thought it would be easy to come to move here. And I have an aunt that's American, cousins, you know,
right.
And I wanted to have that. I wanted to just live in America so badly. I could just eat it. It was just this feeling, this, you know what I mean?
I'm like, getting you a picture.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I would have probably done anything, cut off my hands just to live in America. And, you know, I feel it for these people. I mean,
are you getting ready to bash the U.S. of A.?
No, I'm not going to bash it. I'm just going to say it's like, you know, it's not what you think it is. When you what you have in this vision, you know, you see on television, and you know, what you see and what you think it's supposed to be like, and when you get here, it ain't the same.
You know what? It's like an opportunity. It's an opportunity to make good. You're not guaranteed not guaranteed to have two cars in your garage and you know all that stuff. But what you're guaranteed is an opportunity to make something of yourself.
Absolutely. But the thing is, here's the funny part. Look at now. This is reversing though. I mean, many of these people who come here now are but they know that they have this financial opportunity now to make the same amount of money are going back. There's a tremendous number of many people from India who are returning back home.
I haven't heard a tremendous amount. I've heard of people who come. I've heard people who come over here and who study, and then they go take back that knowledge back to their country.
That's a big one too.
But is that what you're talking about?
No, actually, there was this really great. It was an Indian. I saw this just recently. It was on. It was a forum. With many people from India, and they were talking about. I guess there's a patriotic forum, forum about all these.
Send me a link to that, because so,
I'll have to find it again.
Because for people who are listening, a lot of times we'll quote articles, and you're like, yeah, you're pulling that out of the sky.
And I can't always remember, but I'll try to find.
Right, but if you go to my site jimstroud.com and you'll look up this particular podcast, jimstroud.com/podcast, you'll see them all there. I'll put links to each. I'll put links in the description of this podcast so you can see what we're talking about. But go ahead.
And if anyone who's familiar with this link to or this site, can you please go ahead and put it on there if you don't see it in the next couple of days, please? Because I know this is a very popular site. Okay?
What's the name of it?
I cannot remember, but hold on. I was looking up visas. I was looking up visa information, okay?
Right, because I don't want to just quote stuff out the eye.
I'm going to try to remember to get it. So I'll
all right, finish your point, and we'll post
Thank
it.
Thank you.
All right.
Anyways. So there were these people who were all going back and some people who were actually had returned. And they were talking about why they were returning back home. And they explained about the cost of living, the way they were they found that they are making so much more money in India based on the cost of living index versus if they were making the same amount of money or lower money income down here in America. And they got to go back home, and they also were talking about why they also, you know, left because, you know, the American dream wasn't what they had felt it was going to be. I will find the site. I promise you guys I will find the link. But it's a very interesting because you're hearing it from the perspective of people from India themselves. There were some Americans who had responded, weren't, you know, typical scathing kind of remarks like, well, then if you don't like it, go back kind of situation. But it was really interesting to see because what led me to this originally, too, also, I was looking up information visas, but also there was an article written in Forbes or one of those big Fortune that had discussed how many people from India were returning home. After they came here, got the experience, they did return home because they found it to be more effectively a cost of living.
But you know what's ironic about that? And I was reading this in Daily Report, and I'll also post this on the podcast description as well.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it's sort of a weird situation going on. A lot of jobs are outsourced to India, as everyone knows.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, call center jobs, software writing, medical transcription, back office
airline.
Work, that kind of thing.
Even the airline being fixed, a lot of jobs.
Yeah, JetBlue outsources a lot of their customer service.
Mm-hmm.
So you have about between call centers, software writing, all that kind of stuff, you got about, say, 1.6 million young men and women in India, mostly in their 20s and 30s. And what they're experiencing, ironically enough, is what one listener emailed me about was called golden handcuffs, because you're expected to work like 14 to 15 hours a day. And if you're not a performer, if you're not working 14, 15 hours a day, you're not really considered a performer, although you're getting, you know, a huge amount of cash in respect to their cost of living there. And you get those amenities and a shiny office, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you don't perform at 14, 15 hours a day on average, then you're not considered a performer. So if you're not moving up, eventually you're moving out. And HR people there in these companies, they know this, but they're basically turning a blind eye to it. And what's ironic about that is that people are they're starting to see an increase in things like sleep disorders and heart disease and depression.
They're becoming
Americans.
Oh, wow.
No, that doesn't mean they're coming American.
Oh, wait.
It's just ironic that, you know, they're being outsourced to India and they're having this kind of...
Jim, come on.
And now India is having a lot of issues that some Americans are having, but...
Some?
Now, you can't say the overall majority of Americans.
We're number one in the world in regards to job-related stress. We're number one in the world in regards to also due to job-related stress and heart disease.
So when you hear this kind of thing, you're saying that we're exporting all of our bad issues with these jobs as well?
Okay, let's call it. I call it like basically a workaholic disease. Okay, this is what capitalism that people fight for. We love capitalism.
you prefer communism?
Capitalism.
You prefer communism to capitalism?
No, never said that.
Okay, so what alternative is
there? There's Republican, and then there's also social democracy. There's a whole bunch of stuff in between capitalism and communism.
Hey, capitalism, love it, love it, love capitalism.
Well, let's see what happens. You don't really get to enjoy
it. That's a matter of setting your own priorities.
Who's going to allow you to set the priorities? If you want to enjoy capitalism, you want to enjoy the money, then unless you're working for yourself in America, you got bosses who are going to tell you you have to do X, Y, and Z, whether or not you even...
Because in America you can complain to HR, and they have this thing that many companies trumpet.
Please.
The work. The companies are always trumpeting in their job descriptions, work-life balance.
Okay.
You do a search online for work-life balance and see how many companies come up.
Yes, you can see a lot of people are saying that, and I agree. You know, I've written about this, that HR kind of like trying to strive for it.
Right.
But the problem is, you as an individual will know that the guy right there next to you in your office is going to be trying to hark on your job as soon as you slip up. So what you have to do is you always have to be better than your last sale. In recruiting, we call it you're only as good as your last placement.
Are you talking about in terms of workers in general or in terms of recruiters?
Yes, and work in general. Okay. In sales, it'd be called you're only as good as your last sale. In recruiting, we'd call it you're only as good as your last placement. If you're a searcher, you'd only be as good as your last name generation that you pull in. Whatever you do in living, you're only as good as what you did last time.
I think it's all a matter of perspective.
It may be, but the problem
matter of perspective,
is it's
like,
individual. The fact is, if I go into work, I know, let's say in India, I know that there's about 50,000 people trying to compete for my job. So it's up to me. Maybe now, sure, the company's saying, yeah, work-life balance, and I agree with that. They're probably pushing for that. But then there's always going to be someone out there trying to be better than me to get my job.
So I guess it depends on how you want to frame your career. Do you see yourself as being in a particular company for life, like back in the 50s here in America? Like if you work for, say, General Motors in the 50s or even in the 80s, you know, you were there for life. You know, you started working there at 18, then you retired. But the average job seeker now, quite a few of them, stay on a job just a few years and they go somewhere else. And then eventually they may start a business or an entrepreneur.
That's an entrepreneurial endeavor of some sort. That doesn't work out, too.
That could work in any country. You work somewhere long enough to get...
Many businesses fail in the first 6 months.
That's true. But the guy who created Walmart, how many times did he fail? Like, what, seven times?
Not Walmart.
I
thought he pretty much started Walmart because that was Walmart for him. I think Sam Walton, that was his own.
I think he started other businesses before Walmart took off. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah,
I don't know that for
sure,
so I can't argue that. But
I would lie to you if I say, but I believe that was him by the story. But I'm not going to say that. But I'm not talking about just other people. We're talking, first off, not everybody wants to own a business. You don't
sure.
want one. And I know a lot of people who just don't want to have that, even recruiters who work for other people who don't want to leave the company because they love the security from, that comes from it, which, by the way, I think is a false security, okay? I think that people who, because let's take America, for example, right now. Here in America today, person, American family, in regards to the cost of inflation, is making significantly less and living and there are lower standards than the family back in 1975.
Who is? The present family living on a lower standard than the family in the 70s here in America?
Mm-hmm. Today, the American family...
You have stats for that? That doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Pew just did... I'm going to give you the guys who did this, okay? Northwestern National Life also... I'm not finished with this, and I'm going to finish off with this. Let me get you some information, okay?
Yeah, write these links down so people can see that we're not pulling out the air.
The family's annual income in the early 70s was high enough to buy the average house. Their annual income. In America, most American employers back then also paid for health care premiums for their employees. Two of the most highest expensive things that we ever have to deal with is a house and your employ and your health care. And yet, our employers used to cover them, and your annual income, your paycheck could buy a house. A car back then would cost about $5,000.
You might have, well, you know what? I was reading something recently. You might have a point about the health care, because I don't know if I told you this before, but it was, there's this trend now where companies are being able to get out of paying benefits for people who, once they turn 65
mm-hmm.
and become eligible for Medicare, which is very scary if you're in your 60s.
And now listen to this. This was run by Pew Charitable Trust,
all right,
where they explored how well men in each generation were doing compared to their fathers in a similar age. And their recent generation, the most recent generation earning, is earning less than their fathers and grandfathers at a similar age. This is, again, adjusted for inflation.
Well, let me ask you this then. Maybe if that's being the case, maybe the reason is because people are not staying on jobs for life like they did during that time period.
You can't afford to nowadays. That's not so
well,
much.
Well, it's cheaper. At the same time, it's cheaper to keep her. If you know you're going to hire someone in 1980, and you know that by 2007 they'll still be there, statistically
actually,
speaking, Jim, then you'll make the investment. But
this is where I have, and we've had this discussion about this before, and I even wrote that article, one that was picked up as well by Wall Street Journal, okay? Let me give you a perfect example of what's going on. It's this stupid, polluted belief that there's a war for talent, okay? But the problem is it's not there, and it doesn't exist. Minimum wages hasn't gone. The first time minimum wages have gone up in 20 years was this year.
Okay.
That means, seriously, 20 years. We had tons of inflation, but minimum wages didn't go up, which meant, okay, we will go ahead and keep minimum wages down, which also means we don't have to raise other wages. But inflation just kept going up through the roof. House prices, for example, here in California, only 20%, less than 20% can afford to buy a house in California. Less than 20% of the population, but they did not raise wages here in San Diego particularly.
What about the argument if you raise the wages, you're hurting the business, they won't be able to afford to pay as many people. So you have to force few people to do more work.
They get to buy more. They get to be able to buy more, which means that people are buying more from your place and you get to hire more people to have to be able to sell more. See, I can afford to stay at a hotel if I'm making more money. I could go ahead and eat out of restaurants if I'm making more money, which means these people that own the restaurants get to spend more money. It's called Reaganomics, kind of the trickle-down effect kind of a thing.
So you're in favor of that kind of economic?
You have to. I mean, the thing is, we saw how bad that not raising the wages in 20 years has hurt our economy. Our economy has not been good since 1980. In fact,
it's not been good. I just read an article that, and I'm like, man, there's a lot of articles I'm going to post to this podcast.
Okay.
But I read that it was speculated that we may go up to 5% unemployment in 2008. So does that mean 95% of Americans are working? Is that bad?
Jim, they're not taking in long-term unemployment. They're not also taking in the lack of jobs. See, those numbers, I love those numbers because I also talked about this. You want to look at really how many jobs are there out in the world. In fact, let's take the housing market. Unemployment stayed at 4% when yet there was about a million people who got laid off in 1 year. So, you know, the thing is, when you look at unemployment numbers, I keep looking at these unemployment numbers and I'm saying, wait, They've been 4% for the last 10 years. We're really? Yet long-term unemployment was at the highest it's ever been in history. You know, I look at this stuff and I go, wait, how can we not, as Americans, we're living worse than our parents and our grandfathers do, okay? We're not able to purchase.
That just does not sound right to me. I want to get an economics expert on the show to debate this.
We don't have the same buying or spending powers as our grandparents and parents do, based upon the most. Now, maybe, I mean, things like clothes are a little cheaper.
Mm.
Some things like electronics, but the main things that we need, the things like housing, things like homes, those are areas that we have that are unfortunately more expensive. And the thing is, as I said, Pew just did this. They said, after inflation rises in the cost of living between these generations, while food and clothing has dropped, housing, transportation, education, medical care, and so on, have increased far more dramatically.
So am I hearing you correctly that you think, let me ask you this, do you think a recession is around the corner?
Well, recession, we've been in a recession, but what happens is that
I think a recession when you have less than 5% unemployment.
I'm going to give you, okay, have you ever heard of the clock, what's that called, that clock that they have in New York City that shows what our economic, what is that clock called? You know what
how much, the national debt clock?
Yeah, the national debt clock is, okay.
Well, explain to people. There's a clock in New York that shows you how much debt the entire country has consumed that we have to pay off eventually,
right?
Or at least our great great grandkids at this rate. And you can see this number on a huge clock in New York City.
Did you know that back in 1988 or something like that? It was the year that President Bush.
But Reagan came in.
President Bush came in.
Oh, the first Bush. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that year, right before he came into politics,
right.
That year, that clock actually started going backwards.
Okay.
That was the year that we paid off $100 billion worth of our national debt.
Yep.
Okay? And the clock, they actually had to pull the clock, turn it off. They put a clock over it because it was confusing people because it was going backwards. Now, right before, but 2 to 3 years, was about a little bit longer than that, but 10 years before that, it was 12 years before that, when they had first put that clock in, it actually blew, it was going so fast that it blew the actual, what's the word, it blew the power, the motor of it, okay?
It blew the motor, we were accumulating so much debt that it broke the clock.
By the way, everything I say can always be found, okay, on the internet. If you're good at Google, you can actually find this. I'm not making anything up here, okay?
Mm.
So what happened here was that, you know, since then, we've got into a war, and we know our dollar, there's no dollar. We have no money in the Federal Reserve. There is nothing in the Federal Reserve. People think we have all this money in reserve. We have zero, zip, ditch in the Federal Reserve, okay? China is supporting our dollar. And we owe literally, did you know that every single day America's debt was, I think it was like $1 billion?
How are we getting this much debt?
I think a lot of it's the war that we're paying and all the money that we owe out and the interest that we earn. In fact, Bush just borrowed $300 million to just pay off from the interest on the debt that we owe. So the thing is, so when I read about this unemployment numbers, okay, and I get really concerned because people go, "Ooh, my God, no, we were doing great. Unemployment's only."
Well, let me ask you this then, because every time we have this conversation, whether it's on the air or off, we go back to the. I'll say the Department of Labor said this, and you pull up a research report that says that. In your opinion, where are the most accurate numbers can be found on exactly how many people are unemployed versus how many are employed?
There's the issue, and this is the problem that comes up. We stop counting unemployed people after 3 months.
So the numbers reflect people who
are collecting unemployment insurance.
Hmm.
And there's where the issue. That's why it's been stagnant, because, you see, we stopped counting. They stopped all the other numbers. The Bush administration stopped collecting the numbers and data on the long-term unemployed. They stopped doing that, okay?
Mm.
And don't ask me why. That's one of the reasons that you will see unemployment pretty much being consistent, has it been for the last 10 years, at a hovering around 4%, okay? 4.2, 4.3, 4.5, 4.7, whatever. It's been consistent. And you have to ask yourself, well, okay, what's the real numbers? Now, I want you to remember something that happened right about, was I would say, 3-4 months ago, okay, when there was this huge situation that occurred. When it wasn't even that long. It was back about a month ago. And the government had thought we were going to have 100,000 jobs, okay?
Yeah.
The unemployment rate stayed at 4.6% was in August. Here's the date. Now, despite the drop in payrolls, which was in line with the economic forecast, the unemployment rate that was calculated using a separate survey of households rather than the employer survey used to count those on U.S. payroll.
So you think they're asking the wrong people?
So they don't look at, but you can get this information if you really, really want to get the information. This is where the issue was. They were expecting about 5,000 jobs. Okay?
Right.
500,000 jobs, sorry. But there was a drop. Instead of getting a rate going up, we lost 316 jobs that week. And they were expecting more. Instead, we got less. The unemployment rate, though, stayed unchanged because those counted as unemployed also decreased by 24,000 because they stopped collecting unemployment. So what you need to be looking at is jobs per thousand, JPT, or payroll population, or the employment to population. Those are the accurate numbers as to whether or not we're in a recession or not in a recession.
You know what I'm going to invite you to do, and our listeners, I'm going to ask you all of you guys to check out this site I was looking at. While you're running there, I was looking at a couple of websites, and one site came up very interesting to me called Job Watch. It's by the Economic Policy Institute. You can find it at JobWatch, J-O-B, WATCH.org, and it is research analysis by the Economic Policy Institute, where they do research on working people. And I'm sort of scanning through some of the articles. It's actually a blog, what it looks like. But one thing they have here says an article on the state of jobs and wages, and they're saying that economy up, wages down. They talk about sluggish private job growth indicates failure of tax cuts.
I want to tell you something here.
Different things like that.
Business Week wrote here, okay? I'll give you the link on these two, okay, as I have them in front of me.
Yeah.
Business Week wrote this. If the percentage of Americans participating in the workforce were the same now as it was in 2000, the number officially counted as unemployed would be 9.1 million rather than 7.1, and the unemployment rate would be 5.8 instead of 4.6. So the thing is, what we stopped doing that. We stopped counting the JPTs. We stopped counting all this information. Why? Because, you know what, I keep thinking about this economy. You see, we keep, like, for example, Bush just went ahead and said, okay, we're going to salvage this interest rate. We're going to go ahead and, you know, like, keep the interest rates lower. We're going to salvage all those people who bought all these houses and homes that, you know, they shouldn't be salvaged, you know, to help the bear, you know, but we're going to save them, okay? We're going to save a lot of people who went out of their way and bought these ridiculous mortgages knowing they couldn't afford it, okay? And so what ended up happening is it's like putting hot air in a huge balloon, keep blowing up this hot air, and then later on you put that hot air balloon into a freezer, it's going to burst. And that's what we've been doing to this economy for the past 7 years.
So what do you see happening in 2008 for the average job seeker and the average recruiter?
Well, what I predicted, you know, everybody laughed at me about this too, but I predicted that the housing market was going to crash in the summer of this year.
We talked about that in a podcast. If I remember what podcast it is, we could probably put a recording of it.
I think we probably did because I remember when I said, hey, look, we're going to see this housing market crash. It was coming. It was ballooning. I saw that. I predicted that. I think it was November of 2006 I predicted that, okay? And I said, summer, you'll see it by the summer. And I wasn't doing it by myself. I mean, I was predicting it, going by predictions based upon other economists, based upon history, looking at what happened 10 years ago, looking at how staffing number jobs were going down, looking at all the stuff that you were seeing, and you saw, based upon what these guys were saying, I wasn't making this up. I'm playing it out. I mean, I'm not an economist. I'm just going by what people
You just play one on TV.
I know. No, I don't play one on TV either. All I did was look at people's information and said, look, history repeats itself.
Well, what I want to do is just get those links that you're talking about and point people to those links so they can get evaluate what we're talking about.
Well, this is
and
what we're doing
back.
In India.
Yeah, this is
true. I mean,
true.
Seriously.
Well, no, wait, I won't say this is true. What exactly are you saying what we're doing to India?
Okay, because, like, what we're doing is we're bringing that, and this is, again, back to capitalism and free enterprise. Here it is. We're now, these guys are now seeing a huge influx in their interest there, okay, in the inflation, okay? They're seeing that. They're seeing these raises. And by the way, did you hear about their salaries are raising tremendously, too? So that's one of the reasons, too, where Americans are now coming back. We're seeing a lot of companies insourcing. Take Yahoo, for example. They're insourcing, Yahoo, SBC are insourcing a predominant number of all of their call centers. I think it was like 40,000 people are coming back. Jobs are coming back.
Well, it's not necessarily driven by economy. It could be driven by people complaining that they want to talk to people with better accents or where accents aren't as heavy.
Well,
that's not to slam anyone at all, but I'm just
they
saying.
They went there to because it caught cheap labor. They went there for cheap labor.
Well, you can also get the same amount of labor for the same price in, Brazil, which a lot of companies are outsourcing call centers there, too.
They are doing that now, too, but then you're seeing the same thing happening. The salaries are raising over there, too. Why? Because it's become competitive. You're not just competing with American firms. You're competing with British firms. You're competing with Russian firms. You're competing with other companies.
Well, see, I think that's a good thing, though.
Yes, it is.
I think it's a very good thing.
Guess what, though? That's why we're coming back home. I mean, it is a good thing. I'm not against capitalism, but you got to understand that capitalism is not as free as what people think it is. See, people think capitalism means no laws, no regulations, no rules, nothing like that.
I don't think that. I don't think it's like a Wild Wild West scenario kind of thing. But I do think that is good because it presents an opportunity that you can get what you can out of it.
Absolutely. But the thing is that comes with capitalism comes a cost. And capitalism must, you see, it's just like everything else. You can't have full free democracy, you know, like the democratic society. If it was just all democratic or all Republican or whatever, it ends up being almost like how socialism was. Great idea, but you've got to have a balance. You've got to have a pro and a con, to have positive anarchy. Okay, everything creates an anarchy eventually. But what we're seeing is an anarchy in regards to the free form of capitalism.
Wait, did you say everything creates an anarchy eventually?
Eventually, if you keep it all in one consistent form. If there was only true, everybody was happy all the time, eventually that would create anarchy. If everybody was sad and miserable all the time.
Oh, you're saying it needs to be, like, everything needs to be a balance. Okay.
There has to be a balance.
I can't agree that all things need balance. But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
The little buzzer on the clock.
Oh, 20 minutes?
No.
Okay.
It's been more, but you know, it's a good conversation.
And I'm sorry.
No, not at all. This is what people tune in to us for.
Actually, can I make a plug here about something?
Please do.
I really saw this. Kind of got me kind of going today because I saw a movie called Maxed Out yesterday.
Maxed Out.
And it's
on DVD.
It's a DVD. In fact, you can rent it right now, and I'll tell you, I would suggest that most Americans really, really should watch this.
Why?
And if you have your teenage kids, you should also watch this.
Why?
This is one of the most chilling movies you would ever notice in regards to basically the American style of debt and how right now pretty much, a lot of people don't recognize this, but companies like Capital One and all these different banks, et cetera, they want you to be in debt.
Yeah, that's where they get the money from.
Right. They want you also. Do you know they would rather you don't pay your payments off?
So you can be a slave and pay them interest for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, the thing is, because also they're the ones who pushed to make sure that the bankruptcy laws were changed.
I'm sure. You have to get the bottom line. So this movie Maxed Out, was it a documentary?
It's a documentary, but it actually has some very, very high, powerful individuals also speaking on
okay.
it. And it has some true people, their stories, people who actually committed suicide, two kids who committed suicide, who are still receiving credit card applications, by the way.
Gosh.
One woman who, listen, you know, her daughter had died, and she had done a colon, and they said, no, that she was dead, and now she had the, you know, legal, the government's on her, calling her basically a credit threat and everything else, a threat to American society. I mean, it is one of the most intriguing movies I saw, but what really kind of gets to you, it shows basically, for example, I mean, this is one thing that's totally scary. Did you know that your FICA information is inaccurate 90% of the time?
Explain to the listener what FICA is for those who overseas may not understand what we're talking about.
Your FICA score in America is basically your credit score, what they say you have to earn to be able to purchase or to get credit, okay?
Right.
You want a credit card? You got to have a FICO score. And the higher your score is, the better your interest rates are. The lower it is, the lower your interest rates are. But get this. It's the people with the really low FICO scores who keep getting all those credit card offers.
Because those are the ones who will always stay in debt.
And they're the ones that they want. And they want those guys because they want to make sure they don't pay interest, et cetera. Well, coming back to what's America economy. The problem is a lot of these people who are in debt, based upon these interest rates and these penalties and the new laws that have come out, many of these individuals will not be able to pay off their debt in their lifetime.
Passing on to the next generation and thus keeping the companies richer for another generation and so on.
Sometimes you don't. You get to write it off when you die, you know, and that's what some people do. And the thing
until that law is changed by the big corporations.
Right, and the thing is, I mean, actually, it's the big corporations who push for it, okay? But the thing is that's really sad, again, when we're making less money, but we have to spend more. I mean, think about this. In 1970, your paycheck was the cost of a house.
Wow.
I mean, no way that average person in America's paycheck is going to be the average house in America. And the average house in California is $300,000.
And on that note, we're going to wrap it up here. If you had any questions or comments about the thing discussed here in this podcast, by all means, give us an email. Mm-hmm. You can reach us at Jim Stroud, GIMSTROUD, at jimstroud.com. Also to check out the archives of this podcast, check that out also at jimstroud.com/podcast. And want to wish all of the listeners here a happy new year. Thank you for making this podcast a resounding success. It's all because of you, our listeners. We can stay here and talk forever, but if you're not there listening, then what's the point? So we want to thank you for listening. And happy new year, Karen.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, and back to you, and happy new year to everyone. And thank you for letting me ramble.
That's why we love you.
You know what? You're so patient. You're so patient. Thank you.
Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Jim.
Well, that's it for this show. You've been a wonderful audience. If you like what you heard, love what you heard, or just plain hate what you just heard, let me know. Your feedback matters. You can reach me through my website at jimstroud.com/podcast. That's jimstroud.com/podcast. So until next time, I'm Jim Stroud, and you're not.
And so this ends this edition of the Retro Lounge, home of classic episodes of the Recruiter's Lounge podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe now so you don't miss a future episode, okay? Cool. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bonjour. This is Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. I'm Andrew Pryor, and every week I bring you the wonderful and fabulous people involved in French food, whether they're here in France like me, or from around the world. Each week, we dive into a specific topic, be it a French dish, an ingredient, or a French cuisine cooking technique. My guests are all about French food. So come join me on Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. Bon app.